Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. A big shocker in the financial world, Wells Fargo slapped with a $185 million fine. Unsuspecting customers charged for sham accounts. More than 5,000 so-called rogue employees fired. And if that wasn't enough, the executive who led the group will walk away with a $125 million retirement package. This hour on Point, Wells Fargo woes and where we are with banking regulation. You can join us on air or online. Another bank misbehaving? Do you think we'd fix these problems? Did Wells Fargo set up a sham account for you? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first from Los Angeles is Emily Glazer. She covers Wells Fargo for The Wall Street Journal and is following every twist and turn in this story. Emily, great to have you. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane.
So you've just reported that federal prosecutors are now investigating this massive fraud case at Wells Fargo. U.S. attorneys have issued a subpoena to the bank for documents and materials. What's the latest on this, Emily?
Yes. So we learned yesterday that the U.S. attorney's offices for the Southern District of New York and the Northern District of California, so that would be New York City area and San Francisco area, have issued the subpoena. What we know right now is that prosecutors haven't yet decided if they're going to pursue a case which could be along civil or criminal lines. And basically right now they're looking for documents and materials. We suspect that Wells Fargo will obviously try to defend itself to not let this get to the criminal level, but time will tell, and it'll be interesting to see how that one plays out.
Here's Senator Elizabeth Warren speaking with CNN Money about the Wells Fargo creation of these 2 million fake accounts.
This is a staggering fraud, and it is staggering both for how big it is and also for what it says about Wells Fargo. You know, look, Wells Fargo's turned around and said, hey, we're firing, you know, all the workers who were doing this, but not the management team.
Okay, so we'll get to the management team in a moment. But Emily, lay out the story for us. Last week, Wells Fargo was fined $185 million, staggering fraud, as Elizabeth Warren said there. What is the bank accused of doing exactly?
Services for customers without their knowledge or consent. Others had written about this happening before. Largely, it's known as cross-selling and aggressive sales tactics. So that was core to the bank's business model. It loved saying that it had a ton of cross-sell, that customers, on average, in a household had more than six retail banking products. That was a big part of its culture and its business model. However, what happened is that the sales goals were huge, full of pressure, and it led a ton of these junior employees to open up these accounts or services without customers' consent. What we know is that around 2 million may have been opened accounts without the customer's knowledge. There was money moving around without customer's knowledge. There were debit cards opened with fake email addresses for people. It's pretty serious stuff.
So the scale of this and the brazenness of this is what is so breathtaking to me. More than 5,000 employees engaged in these sham accounts. And those employees were fired, Emily.
Yes, those employees were fired over 5 years. It was about 5,300 people. And my understanding is the bank is still looking into the bad behavior and still continuing to spot and find issues and then fire those people. It was happening in pockets across the country. And what we know is that Southern California back in 2013 was a really bad area, but it definitely spread nationwide and was not just a couple rogue employees in a couple branches in California.
So phantom credit card accounts, 2 million false transaction accounts, fake email addresses at the WellsFargo.com domain. This bank is secretly signing up customers for accounts they didn't authorize, didn't need, didn't know they had. They're paying restitution, right? What was the cost to consumers?
So far, right now, we know that Wells Fargo has paid out about $2.5 million to consumers for refunds that average about $25 per person. But that's a pretty small number for a bank that is about $238 billion in market value and makes, millions of dollars, billions of dollars every quarter in revenue and earnings. So a lot of questions have popped up on why was this fine only $185 million when we see large fines for big banks that are billions of dollars quite regularly? And more importantly, why aren't the consumers getting more of the money? And I know that the bank has done its own internal investigation, as they've said, looking into situations where consumers did not have knowledge or consent of these accounts, and there could have been overdraft fees or insufficient fund fees. And I think it'll be interesting to see as consumers are calling in and made aware of this happening, now that it's become even more public, to see whether that number rises and by how much. Mm. Because the bank has steadfastly said, we trust our internal investigation. It averages $25 per consumer, and we're refunding that money. But, you know, I just talked to a customer yesterday who had an issue with the bank similar to this. An insurance product was opened up without his knowledge or his daughter's, and they ended up getting refunded about $1,000 from the bank and a third party that had opened this up with a fake email address that wasn't theirs. So that isn't exactly the same, but it's a similar practice, and it'll be interesting to see how this all goes down as more and more consumers pop up and call.
So the executive who oversaw this group of 5,300 employees, a woman named Carrie Tolstad, 56 years old, announced she will retire soon with a $125 million pay package. How can that be, Emily Glazer?
So it'll be interesting to see, first of all, how this Justice Department and federal prosecutors plays out, because one of the things that they're looking for is who is responsible. We are not getting a clear answer. Who is to blame? Who's overseeing this, and why did it happen? The Justice Department and the federal prosecutors are looking to see whether someone senior within the bank directed employees to falsify documents in conjunction with the opening of those accounts and products that we talked about without consumers' knowledge or authorization, or whether there's a willful blindness to sales practices on the part of the executives at the bank. Mm. Lots of questions are swirling around Carrie Tolstad. We are working on that, and hopefully keep an eye at the Wall Street Journal and WSJ.com in future days as we continue figuring out the twists and turns of different executives and where it all led to.
Right. But what to this point, only low-level managers have been fired.
My understanding is that it is low-level managers and managers of those managers. That is what John Stumpf had told me yesterday in one of his first interviews since all of this happened. He had not been speaking publicly, and neither had other management.
Well, here is Wells Fargo CEO John Stumpf. Actually, Morningstar named him CEO of the Year for 2015. In January, he spoke to Fortune magazine about what makes a good CEO.
The DNA of leadership is trust. That's true in a family relationship. That's true for government. That's true for business. People will follow people who are realistic and optimistic, have a vision, but they must trust them.
Here he is again, Wells Fargo CEO John Stumpf, telling CNBC's Jim Cramer that he takes responsibility for not getting it 100% right.
It stops with all of us, and especially me. I'm the leader. I get it.
Okay.
I said right off the bat, when we don't meet our goals of 100% right, I'm accountable. And I'm leading this company and leading it forward through this.
Emily Glazer, to this point, John Stumpf had a good reputation as a banker, right?
Absolutely. I think one of the things that Wells Fargo has really loved having is that it's viewed as this folksy bank. It is based in California. It's not near the bad Wall Street banks in New York. It has this stagecoach image that's part of its logo that it loves to talk about. And John Stumpf was the leader of that stagecoach pulled by six horses. I can't tell you how many times I would always hear about this. And because Wells Fargo was not hit as hard with a lot of these big bank fines over the years, especially ones related to investment banking that it is not as big in, it really did come away as the good guy out of the bad bank.
But 5,000 employees involved in this, more than that, really sounds like the culture of their business. I mean, how is he explaining this at this point?
He continues saying that it is not the culture and that what happened is not acceptable. He told me he doesn't want one dime of income that's not earned properly. But it's really hard to say that it isn't the culture. I agree, 5,000 employees is a huge number. And when I've talked to other experts in this industry and other bankers, advisors, consultants that have been involved with big bank fines, they say the 5,000 number is massive. If you remember the London Whale with J.P. Morgan Chase and more than $6 billion trading loss, there were a handful of people responsible for that. So it's just quite a big difference. Even if there wasn't as much money lost, the fact that this is something that consumers and Main Street and the average Joe can understand, they can understand this fraud. They're nervous that it might have happened to them. 5,000 employees is a huge number. And that's why, even though the fine is relatively small, it is completely taken by storm and continues unfolding and becoming bigger day by day, not to mention the political pressure as well.
Well, talk about that political pressure briefly. We just have about a minute left here. The U.S. Senate Banking Committee has called a hearing to look into whether Wells Fargo sales and compensation structure incentivized employees to engage in deception and abusive practices. Those are their words. So certainly the involvement now of the Justice Department raises the stakes here, Emily. Are we looking at the possibility of criminal prosecution? Even against individual employees?
It's possible. Right now, it's in such an early stages of the investigation. You know, they're just collecting documents and materials, and the bank, I'm sure, will steadfastly defend itself and its executives as much as it can. A lot of it sometimes comes down to what's in the documents. And what we're hearing oftentimes from employees is that things were said in person. It's not like there was a big document sent around saying, you know, do this fraudulent, allegedly widespread illegal activity. Mm-hmm. So a lot of that comes down to the prosecutors. And as Elizabeth Warren, who played earlier on the show before, she's going to be a tough critic. And we'll have to see how John Stumpf, who intends, as he told me, to share Wells Fargo's story at that hearing next week,
yep,
how he holds up against a very tough critic of big banks.
Emily Glazer, reporter for The Wall Street Journal, thank you so much. We're talking about Wells Fargo slapped with a $185 million fine for setting up sham accounts to boost revenue. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the Wells Fargo shocker this hour, sham accounts, more than 5,000 employees fired, and where we stand on regulating banks in this country. You can join the conversation. Why is it over and over again the people in power at banks go unpunished, even come out ahead? Here's Wells Fargo CEO John Stumpf Tuesday speaking to the host of CNBC's Mad Money, Jim Cramer, laying out what Wells Fargo was facing.
Wells got hit with a $185 million sanction from a number of regulators, including the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and was involving 5,300 employees, an untold number of accounts. We've got to drill down on that. It may sound like a small amount of money for such a gigantic bank, yet the stock is down big since the beginning of last week, precisely because the nature of the scandal really calls into question what's going on at a company that prides itself on the way it treats the customers.
Joining me now in the studio, Roger Lowenstein, financial journalist and chairman of the mutual fund Sequoia. He is author of America's Bank, The Epic Struggle to Create the Federal Reserve, out in paperback next month. Roger, welcome to On Point.
Jane, it's always a pleasure to be on the show.
Thank you. And from Washington, we're joined by Ed Mrozwinski, a federal consumer program director and senior fellow at the U.S. Public Interest Research Group. You can link to his blog at our website, onpointradio.org. Ed, welcome to you. Nice to have you.
Thank you, Jane.
So, Roger, what's your initial reaction to the $185 million fine, these sham accounts at Wells Fargo?
Well, the brazen betrayal, what they did, creating false accounts, false emails for customers, it's such a blunt, brazen betrayal of customers. And secondly, as Emily pointed out, to have 5,000 people doing this, whether you call it the culture of the firm or not, I think the question for prosecutors as they look at this is, you know, two people can do something, eight, but 5,000 people don't wake up in the morning with the same bad idea. Somebody higher up must have had some inkling, if not directed it.
And Emily said over the course of five years, firing those people.
So that raises another question, which is you find out something bad has been going on. You fire a few people. You find out there was another office involved. You fire some more people. But if it takes you 5 years to fire everybody, that means either you're investigators, your in-house investigators, are deliberate to a fault, or it's continuing to happen. So that raises a whole host of other questions about the investigation itself.
Ed, the irony of the Wells Fargo scam is that even though more than 5,000 employees were involved, the false accounts did not produce very much profit for the bankers who created them. Explain that to us.
Well, I think the bankers churned the accounts. That is, they opened them and then they closed them. That's what I think must have happened because there weren't a lot of fees. But the workers, the frontline bankers who created the accounts, did it because of a misaligned incentive system. They could barely make minimum wage unless they duped their own customers. I think the big question is, what did John Stumpf and Carrie Tolstead do? Because they must have known about it. If they didn't know about it, then that really speaks to a terrible culture at Wells Fargo. If they did know about it and did nothing, also a terrible culture.
Roger, Wells Fargo really came out pretty well after the financial crisis. It got less negative attention, as Emily alluded to, than the other banks, really cultivated this reputation as a bank from Main Street, not tied to Wall Street. I mean, Warren Buffett had his stamp of approval on Wells Fargo.
Yeah, that's really the other part of the shocker is not only did they come out with a better reputation, but they came out with that better reputation because they made fewer bad loans, fewer bad mortgages. They were the bank that was rushed in to bail out Wachovia, a bank that made many, many bad mortgages. And the feds actually picked Wells Fargo both because it had the capital, because it had remained safe, and because it had such a sound, pristine reputation. So to have this bank that was the pillar of reputation in terms of the big American banks have 5,000 of its employees presumably breaking the law. This sounds like a breaking the law to me. That really throws you back and says, wow, who can we trust?
Let's get a lot of callers in here want to join us. Let's get one in here first, Martin in Cedar Falls, Iowa. Hi, Martin. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. Hey, Roger. Hey, I just want to make a comment. I'm a former senior vice president for a mortgage servicing organization when General Motors owned their mortgage servicing agency back in the late 90s, and I was in charge of cross-sell marketing, and I had callers on the phone who were in charge of doing this type of activity. And I can tell you right now, there is no way that Tolstead did not know about that activity, and if she did, she was just being negligent and fraudulent and promoting that type of behavior. Mm. And in my opinion, I managed by walking around. I knew what the scripts were. I knew what people were saying on the phone, and I knew what their goals and objectives were for making sales. From my perspective, there's just no way someone at that level can plead ignorance on this.
Martin, I got it. Ed, that's to your point. Martin brings up the cross-selling piece of this. Ed, tell us about the pressure to cross-sell at Wells Fargo.
Well, I think it's very clear that the incentive pay scale that they had set sales quotas and goals for the low-level employees. They couldn't make any money. I'm talking little money. Mm-hmm. But they couldn't make even little money unless they did this. So they came up with a scheme. But, of course, there were just 5,300 bad apples. There was really no culture at Wells Fargo that created this. I'm joking, of course. 5,300 bad apples, the barrel must be rotten.
That's an orchard.
Yeah.
So, Roger, define cross-selling first for those who may not know.
So cross-selling is when you have a supermarket selling green peas and you say, we could make more money if we sell them carrots and steaks too. And so banks will sell one credit card or insurance or people who have regular CD. Really, it was people with CD accounts selling mm-hmm. the mortgages mm-hmm. and credit cards. The pressure comes in, that point that Emily made at the top of the hour, that the typical Wells retail account had six products already. So think of your own budget and finances. You have a mortgage, a home equity line, a few credit cards, but there's only so much plastic you can carry in your wallet, and they had reached saturation. People didn't want more. They didn't need more, and the business had run into natural limits. At that point, some of these account execs did feel pressure to grow the business by bending the rules.
So after everything we've been through, Ed Merzwinski, the financial crisis, the big bank issues over the years, the big question is, how could this happen given all the regulations and the billions of dollars poured into compliance efforts? How could something so widespread, so corrupt have happened?
Well, I think, again, it's a bad culture at the bank, but we're really have improved what we've got to protect us. The Dodd-Frank Act created a number of protections for the safety of the banking system. And also, when Senator Warren was Professor Warren, she came up with an idea that we have an agency to protect us from a burning toaster. Why don't we have an agency to protect us from a burning financial system? And so she created the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau idea, and we, PERG, along with Americans for Financial Reform, worked with her to create it, and we fight to protect it on Capitol Hill every single day. They have already returned almost $12 billion to consumers who have been ripped off by banks and payday lenders, and they're doing a good job. The idea that this is a small penalty, it is small relative to the market cap, but the $100 million portion that the CFPB got as the lead regulator out of the $185 million, it's the biggest fine they have ever imposed. And they're doing this good work despite the fact that there are a lot of guns aimed at them. So I'm satisfied that we've fixed things. We can continue to have flash fires like this, but I think we're in much better shape.
Okay. Improved regulations, Roger, yet this happens. And might I say $185 million for a bank that raked in $5.5 billion in profits just in the second quarter this year alone?
I think a real test for whether we have fixed things is whether the incentives turn out to have been corrected. So the incentives are fine for the 5,000 people who got fired. Mm-hmm. They learned the hard way that crime doesn't pay. But what about Ms. Tolstead and other executives who may be shown to have been responsible? Dodd-Frank contains provisions for so-called clawback, so that if your bonus was inflated by things that turn out to have been improper, the banks, your employers, can claw that money back. And the first indications from Wells Fargo are that that's not going to happen, but this is still early going. It's very important, I think, that if she or others were responsible, they don't get to walk away with tens or hundreds of millions for wrongdoing. That would be a terrific sign that the new system is working.
Let's get Carol in here from Austin, Texas. Hi, Carol. Glad you called. Welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
My question is, how long has this culture been at Wells Fargo? My sister and brother-in-law in North Texas were ripped off by a Wells Fargo loan officer and a home dealer because they had a home-based business and their foundation was falling apart. And so they needed a home as soon as they could get it. And the home was funded, $150,000. They never got the home. And what did Wells Fargo do? They persecuted my sister and brother-in-law, trashed their credit rating, so they were then vulnerable for another con man. My sister had to do sleuthing herself, and she found numerous other people who had been ripped off by this same guy. But as far as they know, Wells Fargo did nothing to deal with him.
Sounds like a horror story, Carol. I hear it, and I appreciate the details of it. Roger, I mean, we're going to hear more of this coming out.
You know, Carol's story, I think, goes to Ed's point that people on the Hill, mostly from the Republican Party, have been working to eliminate the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. And I think they should actually put in the lobby of the Bureau a plaque to Wells Fargo, because I think Wells Fargo has demonstrated the need for the Bureau, and it's not going any thanks to these revelations. It's not going away anytime soon, and I think that's proper.
Ed Verzwinski, talk to me about the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the CFPB. You referred to it once in our conversation already. Republicans in Congress have been trying to get rid of it. Tell us what it is, how important it is in protecting the public, and how it played into this situation.
Well, it is the first federal financial protection agency that has the interests only of consumers and not of banks. In the previous administrations, bank regulators tended to be friendly with banks because they thought that was their job. The CFPB oversees the entire financial system. It investigates crime. It investigates fraud. It does a lot of education work. It has a special office for senior citizens, a special office for service members, one for students, U.S. And it has power, again, not just over banks, but also over their non-bank competitors. It's got a consumer complaint system that helps alert it to these kinds of problems. It's only 5 years old, and I think this month it may collect its 1 millionth complaint about something in the banking system. You can find out more at consumerfinance.gov.
Here's an interview from Monday. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau Director Richard Cordray telling CNBC that the penalties imposed by Wells Fargo are a loud and serious warning. He also defended his organization for not catching the problem sooner.
This is the largest penalty we've ever levied against a bank. This was outrageous conduct. It was a violation of trust and an abuse of trust. It should not have happened. And I guarantee you that we will be seeing that it does not happen again at any bank.
And yet the Treasury Secretary Jack Lew, Roger, portrayed the CFPB as the case cracker in the Wells Fargo case. But I've read it was actually a story in the L.A. Times, which uncovered the firing of the employees at a branch, I think, in Los Angeles. And then a larger investigation by the Times sparked the formal inquiry that we saw by the CFPB, meaning they didn't discover this problem.
That's right. But I don't think, and Ed would know better, but they don't have the staffing. They don't have, you know, investigators and field offices throughout the country. What they have is a very good inbox for complaints. And if they get the right complaints coming in the inbox, they can notify authorities and so on. But maybe slap them on the wrist for claiming credit for discovering what they didn't. But they're not the FBI, so that shouldn't surprise us.
They're not an investigative unit, Ed, is what I'm hearing here.
Oh no, they. You know, I would say that again, the CFPB is only 5 years old. It's been staffing up. It started from zero on July 21st, 2011. I think that they worked. The difference between the CFPB and other predecessor bank regulators is that they would work with the City of Los Angeles attorney. They will work with state attorneys general, and they're proving that time and again. This is only one of their many enforcement cases, and so I don't think they deserve a bad rap for getting in on this late. I will point out one other thing that I think Mr. Stumpf alluded to, the CEO, and that is in addition to the $100 million, their name is being dragged through the mud, their reputation. When John Stumpf goes to the golf course or the country club, his friends are going to say, well, what's going on, John? And I'm hopeful that the board of directors will really take a close interest, because only if the board of directors gets engaged could there be any clawbacks. I agree with Roger. The clawbacks of the unearned, unjustified monies to the executives must be a message that's sent.
Roger, you were initially skeptical of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and it seems now you're supportive of it.
That's right. I thought, you know, we have a whole lot of bank regulators. I was skeptical of what I thought and sometimes still think is the hostile tone of some of the supporters of the Bureau against banks, because I don't I don't want listeners to think that it's sort of we the people against they the banks. We actually want banks in this country to be healthy. We want them to be profitable. We want them to be strong.
We want them to be honest.
And we want them to be honest. But banks are staffed, obviously, by mortals. They do bad things sometimes, and we need watchdogs. And we've been shown enough times that we need watchdogs. So if it takes the CFPB to jump on them, so be it.
But the abuses that we saw at Wells Fargo, would they have been perpetuated without a watchdog group like the CFPB?
Well, I think once the news came out, somebody was going to get them for that. I think that the glare and the publicity is greater with an agency that, as Ed mentioned, it was the birth child of Elizabeth Warren. And their charter, other regulators have different charters, bank soundness, bank safety. The CFPB is a consumer. They are watching out for the consumer. So they put a particular spotlight on that. And I just think, Jane, we should mention, note, one thing this scandal doesn't do is it doesn't raise questions about bank safety, soundness. This is not massive losses. This is not Wells Fargo going down the tubes or being threatened with going down the tubes. This is not risking the financial system. This is a ripoff of consumers.
Thank you. This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about the shocking news about Wells Fargo, sham accounts, big pay packages, and how we regulate banks. This hour, you can join the conversation. How effective are regulators? If it took a newspaper, the Los Angeles Times, to uncover this, is more regulation the answer? Can you regulate honesty? We're speaking this hour with Roger Lowenstein, a financial journalist and author of America's Bank, The Epic Struggle to Create the Federal Reserve. And with Ed Mrozwinski, he's a Federal Consumer Program Director and Senior Fellow at the U.S. Public Interest Research Group. Here's a Wells Fargo commercial from 2015.
We know what went into building your wealth. Our financial advisors put the same care into helping you craft a plan to manage it. Wells Fargo. Together we'll go far.
And here's KERO-TV in California speaking to a Wells Fargo customer, Glenn Pellet, who describes his experience at the bank.
They are very aggressive about opening accounts. And like I said, I'm always getting emails. I'm always getting solicited to come in and do something else. You know, and I'm like, I got what I need.
A lot of calls here. Let's get some in. Larry in Richburg, South Carolina. Hi, Larry. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Jane, how you doing?
Hi, well, go ahead.
I want to make a comment.
Okay.
In 2004, I bought a piece of property, 22 acres, a pond, 3,000-square-foot house. In 2008, I remodeled it completely. In 2008, my wife died, and things started happening. My name was removed. I was the principal borrower on the loan. My name was removed from the mortgage and the deed after I signed the paperwork and left out of the attorney's office. My wife was with me. She stayed. But my name was removed with whiteout ink. And my paperwork, it was Wachovia then. My paperwork was stolen out of my house. A family member on my wife's side, and we couldn't find everything we needed.
Bottom line, you had a experience at Wells Fargo that is sounds like a lot of other people are joining joining the chorus here, Roger.
Yeah, it sounds like maybe you're ripe for complaining to the CFPB.
Right. Allie, let's get you in here in Hilton Head, South Carolina. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for facilitating this really important conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an attorney, and I represented a Wells Fargo employee who was fired for trying to report just this kind of behavior up the corporate chain. And we ended up settling the case before trial, and because of the confidentiality agreement required by Wells Fargo, I can't go into too many details. But my heart sank when I heard this story, because I'm thinking, what if more employees have the resources and the time to proceed to trial? Maybe the courts are where Wells Fargo should be held accountable if regulation isn't the answer.
Mm. Allie, thank you. I mean, Ed, you hear these stories, you hear Allie, you hear Larry before her. You have to wonder, when you scratch beneath the surface here, what does this indicate about other practices at Wells Fargo? What about underwriting policies? What about reports to investors, to regulators, and all the rest?
Well, I think they all deserve a close look. And by the way, in terms, if you're an employee, the consumerfinance.gov website, the CFPB website, and I believe the Securities and Exchange Commission and other regulators all have confidential whistleblower sections. So I would encourage you to check with them. If you're a consumer with a problem, obviously go to consumerfinance.gov and write a complaint to the CFPB. They mine the complaints for information to develop enforcement actions.
Let's get Jerry in here from Montgomery, Alabama. Hi, Jerry. Glad you waited. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. Great job always for Tom.
Thank
and, you.
You
know, I don't understand why people bank with traditional big banks anymore. I bank with a credit union that has zero branches in Alabama. I'm able to deposit checks using my phone. I rarely have cash anymore. If I need cash, I can get it from ATMs that are free that I can find on the app that aren't at a bank. It just infuriates me to no end when I hear these stories about big banks. And I mean, the $185 million fine is relatively small to really what the bank's worth.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody goes to jail for this. It just seems like there is no responsibility. And I don't understand why people do not bank with credit unions that are friendly, that have good customer service, that do not pester me for services I do not need.
Got it, Jerry. Credit unions, local banks, yeah. local, Roger. Is that an answer here?
Well, I think we're going to have big banks for a long time, but I just want to comment on what the previous caller, Ali, said, because I think that's possibly a real bombshell. She said she's an attorney who represented an employee who tried to report this sort of misbehavior and was fired for it. And obviously that's one woman's allegation or one client's allegation, and it's sealed. But I think that's a very important question for investigators as they look at whether this was how broad this was, how cultural this was, to the extent that this was reported. If it's true that it was reported to higher ups at Wells Fargo and their response was to fire a whistleblower, I think that really raises the ante on the types of punishments and the level that the punishments should go up to.
Here's Oliver in Dayton, Ohio. Hi, Oliver. Welcome to the program. Oliver, are you there?
I sure am. Can you hear me?
Yes. Please go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. So we've been talking a lot about how the bonuses work for the lower level employees at Wells Fargo. And my question was, to what extent are the Wells Fargo executives' compensation, is it tied to the stock price? And if there's a pressure to continue to see that stock price going up, if that pressure is being manifest in some of the unethical or illegal behavior that we've been seeing in the news lately?
It's an excellent question, Oliver. Thank you. Ed, I'll let you answer that.
Well, it is very much tied to a stock price. And the problem is a lot of it is created a problem where people look at short-term goals rather than long-term goals. And that gets at the clawback provisions. We would like, I think both Roger and I would agree, that a good message would be sent that if we could make the incentives more based on the long-term growth and health of the bank and align the bank's goals with those of its customers, which is the job of the CFPB, we'd all be better off. But too much money is given in incentive pay, especially deferred compensation.
So to flush out, I agree with that, what Ed said, the long-term and short-term, the idea is if you're compensated for, say, the stock price going up over 10 years, that's good because, you know, the shareholders make out, the bank's doing better, the employees will do better. But if it's if you can get compensated for a one-year pop and then 3 years later it turns out to have been a chimera, that's not good. And I think the strongest message that could be sent, whether or not John Stumpf, and we'll assume he knew nothing about this for now, he's responsible, the board should cancel his bonus next year. You know, he made 19 – I think I read their figure – $19 million in the most recent year. Some of that, a small part of that was salary. But the bonus should be zero next year. And the year after that, if he doesn't have 5,000 bad eggs, he'll get a bonus again. But why get a bonus in a year for which 5,000 of the people you're responsible for are breaking the law?
Here's Treasury Secretary Jack Lew telling CNBC on Tuesday that the Wells Fargo case demonstrates why we continue to need strong financial oversight.
This ought to be a moment when people stop and remember how dangerous the system is when you don't have the proper protections in place. This is something that our watchdogs found. If they weren't there, it would still be going on.
Roger Lowenstein, John Stumpf goes before Congress on Tuesday to talk about all this. What do you expect?
Well, I don't know what I expect, but I know what I think he should do. I think he's really got to make a total apology to – you know, there's a difference between telling people that you have been responsible and acting responsibly and really accepting full blame, not defending, not splitting hairs. I think Warren Buffett, who happens to be his biggest shareholder now, did this masterfully in 1991 when he was brought in to rescue Salomon Brothers, a bank that had one rogue trader, just one rogue trader. But the CEO was dismissed on account of it. And he gave out his personal phone number to every Salomon employee so that if there was any future evidence of wrongdoing, he could be notified, you know, not some process going up the chain. And it really kept Solomon in business. He demonstrated enough in form and in deed that regulators were willing to give the bank a second chance. And you know, I hope that John Stumpf is able to do something similar.
Can he ride this through, Ed?
I think that the way the world works, he probably will ride it through unless the public keeps up the pressure. And I can tell you, Senator Warren and many other senators who are critical of unfair bank practices will be there on Tuesday at that hearing, and they will air it out pretty loudly.
Here's Rich in Fairfield, Connecticut. Hi, Rich. You're on the air. Welcome to One Point.
Hi. Just a couple thoughts.
Okay.
I feel too big to fail is the problem. And a few thoughts. Who installed that culture in the bank? Was it Warren Buffett, which came down through the chain of command? And now there's other heads and CEOs. But is that the same culture that Warren Buffett installed? And probably part of the problem is, too, like just to relate it to the election cycle, you know, it's Amazon, okay, Jeff Bezos, the Washington Post. It seems like Trump wants to break up Amazon because it's too big. And I wonder if that's part of the thing that, you know, people are making Trump popular.
Okay. All right, Rich, thank you. I'll go to your first point, Ed Mrozinski. Talk about the too-big-to-fail culture at these banks. Where'd that come from? How does it continue?
Well, the too-big-to-fail culture is essentially the banks argue that there is no moral hazard. They can get as big and do as dangerous practice, as many dangerous practices as they want because they're so important to the economy. That was shown in the bailout in 2008. The Dodd-Frank Act took steps to fix that. But the other question that's raised, by the way, are these banks also too big to jail? Very few people have gone to jail for unfair banking practices since the 1980s era savings and loan crisis. And then the third part is, are they too big to manage? If John Stumpf didn't know about this, is his bank just too big to control?
Roger Lowenstein picked that up. Two excellent points. Too big to jail, too big to manage.
Yeah, I think too big to manage is a valid question, but I think it's more a question for the shareholders of Wells Fargo. This was then, say, for regulators. I don't think this was a question. It was not too big to fail. There's no hint of failure or safety of the system or anything like that. Nothing to viability, neither the bank nor the economy was put at risk. The whether Stump and the shareholders and the board feel he can manage so many employees, we'll see. The question about too big to jail gets to, I think, a question that I'm sure Senator Warren will bring up and is a pretty interesting one. The frustration has always been that, you can probably send some of these 5,000 people to jail, but to what end? You'd have to open a new prison to send them all, and they're small fish. And it's always been very hard to show that, say, someone in John Stump's position knew about this stuff. And I'm going to assume until I read otherwise that he didn't. That's why I continue to think that the way to discipline senior executives is to speak to them in their own language, and that's in their pocketbook. Mm.
Lots of comments from our listeners on our website. Morgan says the invisible hand of the market is unfortunately attached to the arm of flawed humans. That's why regulation is necessary, not to regulate the markets.
Nice
but
metaphor.
Rather to regulate humans from our very nature of being all too human. Simon says the real villains are the executives that implemented those unattainable goals, the managers, the supervisors that kept up the pressure to meet those numbers, pressuring the employee who just wanted to keep their job. Here's Mary in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Mary, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Well, I'm a regular Joe Schmo off the street. I write three or four bad checks that total about $2,000. I end up with a Class C felony on my record for life and 10 years in prison. I just don't understand how these executives keep getting a pass. I wouldn't get a pass. They shouldn't get a pass.
Mary, thank you. Ed, do you want to speak to that?
Well, I think Congress is looking at it, and we'll hear more on Tuesday. But the real question is, so the CFPB can bring a civil complaint, but now we've got, as Emily said at the top of the show, we've got the U.S. attorneys' offices all investigating to see if there is enough information to bring a criminal complaint.
Let's get John in here from Richmond, Vermont. John, you're on the air. Welcome to On Point.
Hello, Jane.
Hi.
Two quick comments.
Okay.
One, these are hierarchical organizations, so everybody has to report up the ladder. If they're not disclosing this information, say firing people over a number of years, then they're not speaking truth to power. So that begs the question of the culture and what their responsibility is, and that goes all the way up to the Board of Trustees. The second comment is, if this were outside of a corporate culture, these acts by the employees would be considered identity theft. So, I mean, this should be taken very seriously, and to lay all the blame at the point of the spear, the end of the people doing the deed, mm-hmm. is misplaced. Mm. I find it highly unlikely that at least somebody up the chain
didn't know
something, if not incorporated it into the job description.
John, thank you very much for the call. In our last 30 seconds here, Roger Lowenstein, I mean, bad behavior seems almost banked into our banking sector, baked into our banking sector. And will there be a time when we stop associating banks with this sort of predatory behavior?
Well, in the 1930s, the bank robber Willie Sutton was asked why he robbed banks. And he said that's where the money is. And, you know, people still go to banks. They're potentially very lucrative positions. Therefore, the temptation towards corruption is going to be great. And we have to maintain vigilance. Mm.
Ed, I'll leave you with the last word here.
Well, I would urge your listeners that the idea of the CFPB needs no defense, only more defenders. Please contact Congress and tell them to support a strong CFPB.
Ed Mrozwinski, Federal Consumer Program Director at the U.S. Public Interest Research Group. Thanks so much, Ed. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Roger Lowenstein, financial journalist, author of America's Bank, The Epic Struggle to Create the Federal Reserve. Glad to have you in studio, Roger. Thank you.
Jane, it was a pleasure.
You can continue the conversation, listeners. Get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. Week in the News is tomorrow. This is On Point. Thank you.